following program contains strong language, a liberal bias, mind-boggling homosexuality, shade, frequent complaining, oversharing, shit-talking, the occasional uplifting anecdote, and all-around verbal debauchery. All opinions expressed are that of our supreme, the gorgeous and talented Sister Indica. These are not the opinions of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, Work.com, or LO Drag. Consider this your trigger warning.
Oh my God, it's Joy Bomb. Hi friends, it's me, Sister Indica, your homegirl for life, and you're listening to Joy Bomb. Thank you for joining me today on Joy Bomb. This is episode 99. Yes, 99. Can you fucking believe it? One and one more episode. The next one coming up is going to be my 100th episode. A probably 3 hour long spectacular. Celebrating the first 100 episodes of Joy Bomb. So today's a very special episode. We're hitting a milestone. So I said, who should I possibly have on to celebrate this momentous occasion with me? Everyone I asked said no. But then Sister Zsa Zsa Gaborshin said yes. So I've decided to have her on. So Zsa Zsa, welcome to Joy Bomb. How are you doing, darling?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
And did you hear how I messed up? I said Sister Zsa Zsa Gaborshin.
I was going to say something, but then I thought maybe I'd just let it go.
No, let's not let it go. I'll give it to the people. I'll give them the scoop of who you are and what's going on.
Okay.
You are a novice sister with what is the full name? You're in Kentucky. You're in the Louisville. You're a mission that you're trying to become a fully professed house. What is the full name of your abbey?
We actually don't have an abbey name. I think that we overlooked that in the early days. So we are just the Derby City Sisters. One of the names that people call Louisville is Possibility City. So I have been pushing for us to adopt the name the Abbey of Infinite Possibilities, but it hasn't happened yet.
That's nice.
I know.
So you're currently a novice. How, like, have you done a project yet? Like, when are we getting that black veil on you? When is that happening?
Well, since we're still a mission house, the house has to be elevated by a vote at the UNPC before I can become a black veil. So I have completed a novice project. I've been a novice for just over a year now. I just had my anniversary at the end of March because I elevated at our March GM a year ago. So I completed a novice project, I think, in the middle of the summer. I hosted a candlelight vigil. In solidarity with Syrian LGBT folks. Syrian. Oh my God, I can't believe I forgot that for like 5 seconds. So I'm just kind of waiting to see when we elevate as a house.
Do you have any idea of when that's going to happen? Like, are you nearing the completion of all the things you have to do to be eligible to be elevated to a fully professed house and therefore get your black veil?
Yes, we're very close, actually. We have completed all the requirements. We're basically just putting together what they call the exequator binder, which is actually a website now. So binder doesn't really make sense. We had to move that into 2016. So we had to make a list of all of our events and put up all of our tax documents that prove that we're a 501c3, testimonials from members and members of the community, things like that. And once that's all up and going and we submit it to the UNPC, then they all vote on it.
And just to let you know when that happens, I will be holding a candlelight vigil here in Fort Lauderdale.
Excellent.
For you.
Yes. sacrifice all the appropriate chickens for that one.
I will. I will bathe in their blood because it really, it keeps me looking very youthful, I will say. And I will tell you that I know that it's keeping me very youthful because I'm coming up to my 20th reunion, high school graduation reunion. We're actually at the 19th year, but they created this little group and added all the people from our class to this like Facebook group. And I was just going through and looking, and I was like, oh my God, I don't know if it's because these people have children or they smoke or life has just ridden them hard. But I'm like, wow, these people like look old and I still look very young. So I really do think it's the chicken blood.
That makes sense. I would be celebrating my 15th year reunion this year, but I was homeschooled. So it's just me.
So talk to me about being homeschooled. Like, were you homeschooled your entire educational career?
For the most part, I went to preschool, kindergarten, and first grade in public schools in California, where I was born. And then from second grade on, I was homeschooled. I have five brothers and sisters who are also homeschooled with me. So it was quite the party.
Are you Mormon?
No, I'm not actually. But
are you part of a cult?
That would be one of the big footnotes in the life of Zsa Zsa Gabortion is that I did actually grow up in a conservative cult. They called themselves Independent Fundamental Baptists, but had no real affiliation with any of the major Baptist denominations. But they shared a lot of similarities with FLDS folks. So that was an exciting time of my life.
And when did you guys get out of the cult?
Well, my parents left that church about the time that I was 13 or 14 years old. And we started attending another church, an evangelical free church, which is like a major denomination. They're vaguely related to Lutherans like a long way back, but they're basically just evangelical Christians that are on the liberal end of things.
Oh, okay.
And that made a big difference for me for the most part, but still being, you know, figuring out the whole LGBT thing at that time of my life and encountering still fairly conservative Midwestern Christianity, because at that point my family had moved to Illinois. It was definitely a definitely interesting way to spend your formative years.
Yeah, I also grew up in the church, but I did not grow up. I think my life would have been more interesting had I grown up in a cult, because that's a fun story to tell. But I definitely also grew up in the church, and we were not part of any wing of the church that was particularly liberal. So it was very much conservative and, you know, fire and brimstone and anti everything fun, except drinking. These people did drink. They drank a lot, so that wasn't a problem. So how did that really impact you in your coming out process? Because I know it fucked with my head, and it made it very difficult for me to come to terms with it. So how was it for you having that background, even though you later ended up in a more progressive wing, your formative years were spent in a very conservative mindset?
Well, I think in terms of their acceptance of gay people or anything vaguely queer, they were both pretty much the same. There was less fire and brimstone at the more liberal church, but there was still just as much, you know, gay people are wrong and bad and the gay agenda, blah, blah. Both pastors like to call Ellen DeGeneres Ellen Degenerate.
Oh, Lord.
But at that same time, that was really when, like, we got our first internet connection and like had like cable internet. And I was like 13, 14, 15 years old, up late talking to people on the internet, basically. And I found community that way, which really was a positive experience for me. And I think that it's really formed the way that I use the internet today as well. I think anybody who follows me on Facebook knows that I'm kind of blunt.
A bitch.
I mean, there's that too, but you know, I live my life very openly on the internet because that's kind of how I always have been able to do that. Like, I'm definitely not a private person in person. Once you get to know me, I am full of too much information. But it's so much easier for me to just kind of express those things online because of that time, because I just had, you know, 10 years of only being able to express myself online. So that really helped in those times where I could explore identity and explore who I was and talk to people who are having, you know, my age and having the same struggles, or sometimes people who weren't my age, but you know, that's how the internet goes. Chat rooms are a big thing, man. And that made a huge difference for me because I didn't have that exposure in person until I was 19, 18 years old. And even then I didn't really know how to find other people because I had been alone for so long. So.
And a lot of people downplay the importance of the internet when it comes to just building connections, because I don't know, because I'm a little bit older than you, just slightly older than
just
you,
just a little
bit. But I feel like I come from just a different generation of people where they feel that, oh, it's the internet. Like, that's not real. That's not how you make real friendships or real connections. You have to do this in person. That's the only way to do it for and have a real connection. But I think that I totally disagree, you know, as I've learned over the years and, you know, I was a late adopter to the internet because I was so poor. We couldn't afford the internet, you know, no dial-up, no AOL dial-up at my house. I had to wait until I was in college before I even had access to like a regular computer in the library or my roommate's computer where I could get online and chat people up or do anything online. So I totally disagree. I think that I think this is just the way it is now. Like, this is reality. This is today. In today's day and age, people make connections online. They make them through social media channels. They make them through apps even.
Yep.
You know, no more Yahoo ads to meet people. It's now Grindr. You just have a Grindr app. It's just technology. So what kind of connections have you made, obviously, besides made? We met through the internet, the power of the internet. What other, like, big connections have you made with people online? Like, do you have any, like, long-standing friendships based on solely online?
I do, actually. So there's a couple of people that I met when I first got on the internet at, like, 13 or 14 years old that I'm still in contact with. And those are some of the, in fact, I think those are the only friendships I still have from that time of my life because, you know, I got to make those friendships in such a more honest way. Like, a lot of the people that I was friends with when I was involved in the church, you know, I tried to be Facebook friends with them and we just ended up having arguments. So we don't really have contact anymore. So these internet friends have been people that I've been friends with for now almost 20 years, which is really crazy to think about. And some of them we still haven't had a chance to meet yet. Like, it's going to happen. Damn it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
that's what I was gonna ask you. I was gonna say, have you actually met anyone that you were just friends with from, you know, an online perspective? Have you actually brought that into the real life to IRL?
Yeah, I mean, here and there, early on, when I was like 17 or 18 years old, I had a circle of internet friends, and one of them lived in Columbus, Ohio, which is where we had some family friends, and this person's family was also religious, and our parents ended up talking, and so they were okay with us meeting, so we like hung out whenever we'd go to Columbus, which is pretty cool. And then I had another internet friend who was at one point my internet girlfriend.
Oh,
I don't know what was going on. She came and visited me when I had moved back to California. And that was a lot of fun, too, because we had known each other for, like, I don't know, like 8 or 9 years at that point. So it's just been people here or there. I've tried to look some people up that I remember and am not always successful. And then I also, like, think of people that I talked with quite a bit, and then I realize I don't know their real name. And so then that's also a problem, because then I'm like, how do you look up somebody by their old screen name? It doesn't really happen. So that's kind of a bummer because I miss some of those people, but you know.
Well, you mentioned that you've moved around a lot. Are your parents fugitives? Are they, is this court ordered? What is the reason that you guys moved around so goddamn much?
We're in the Baptist relocation program now. So my parents are both from California. Originally they are, my mom's from the Bay Area. My dad's from the San Joaquin Valley. And they met and married in LA, and I got to live there until I was about 7 years old. And then they decided, well, my dad had been working for Northrop at the time and was downsized and received a job offer in Illinois. And so they were just like, okay, I guess we're just going to move to Illinois. And so we did. A former business partner of my dad's was living there. He's the one who made the job offer. And so they worked together for like 10 years after that. And so a lot of my formative years from 7 to 18-ish, I think we moved back when I was like 18 or 19, were spent in Illinois. And then we're kind of in the same situation again where my dad didn't have steady employment. My dad's always been a house painter or like a commercial painter, not like a picture painter, but like a building painter. And he was able to secure a foreman job in California once again with a military contract. And we moved back, which is where all of their family are. So most of my dad's family lives in Santa Maria, California, where my parents currently live. And that's where they all are now. So.
So how the hell did you end up in Kentucky?
Well, that's another internet story. So I had moved from Santa Maria, California, around the age of 24-ish, 24, 25. I moved up to Portland, Oregon for a few years. And Portland, Oregon is a fantastic, beautiful place to visit, but it's nearly impossible to find steady employment there. Because you're like going up against, you know, people with like master's degrees and PhDs who are also willing to work for minimum wage at Starbucks. Like, it's so competitive, it's not even funny for like the worst jobs. So I would have a job for like 4 or 5 months at a time at like a crappy call center or like some super temp thing. I had worked in printing for a long time, like paper printing in California. And so like I did a lot of temp work through a company that staffed printing people. Up in Oregon, but even that was, you know, fraught with inconsistency. So I started talking to this guy on a website, and things went really well. And then I visited, and then he visited, and then I visited. And then I was like, well, I'm not doing anything here. So, yeah, that also ties into another weird Sister Zsa Zsa, novice Sister Zsa Zsa abortion fact, which is that at a point in time, a definable portion of my income was made from designing and selling knitting patterns. And so I had sold a pattern on a popular website, and I had sold thousands of copies of it at $2 a piece. So all of a sudden I had this chunk of cash and this boy that I liked in Kentucky. And I was just like, fuck it, I'm moving to Kentucky. And so that's how I'm here. Except we're not together anymore.
I was going to say, do you see him? Do you run into him? Like,
no, we're actually still pretty friendly. I mean, that ties into other Zsa Zsa stories as well. But we're, you know, we run in similar social circles. We both work for the same company, although at different branches, I guess. It's a restaurateur group, and he works at one restaurant, and I work at another one. So, like, you know, we see each other around. Louisville's a small city, and really trying to avoid people doesn't really work here. So it kind of forced us to like figure that out real fast. But it wasn't like a big dramatic breakup either. Like, we kind of just reached this point where like it was done. So yeah, I don't know. Sometimes it's easier when it's like a big dramatic thing. You can just be like, that person's an asshole. I don't want to see them ever again. And that makes those feelings really easy to just like dismiss. But, you know, it's made me a better person, I guess. Growing opportunities.
Has he met Zsa Zsa?
Oh, yes, many times. He actually is a DJ now. He wasn't doing that when we were together. It's something that's happened in the last couple of years. And he hosts a couple of different parties around town. And he usually invites the sisters to come, actually. He threw a prom at the Cure Lounge, which my friend Allison owns, which is fabulous. And it was like under the sea themed. And so the sisters came and we were the chaperones. There's air quotes around that because all we really did was bring condoms and drink. So it was really fun though. So he's been really supportive of my sister journey as well, which is something that happened after we broke up as well. So it's been kind of cool to find those ways to continue supporting each other without necessarily having the confines of a monogamous relationship, you know?
Is he a bear?
No.
Because it's usually like bears, like if you're a bear, you have to become a DJ. Like
it's true.
It's a prerequisite.
I mean, when I was trying to be a bear, like real hard in Portland, Oregon, I did DJ. So
there you go.
Yep. That's what'll happen to you.
So let's talk about the sisterhood now. Let's talk about how did you find this group? Because you're not one of the founding members, so they existed at some point and you found them. How, what led you to them? Like, what made you want to even join?
Well, if you could call existing without me existing.
I've done pretty good for the last 37 years, so I don't know, but I'm sure they were fine too. Yeah. You call this living? I don't know.
Well, I had encountered the sisters while I was living in Portland, Oregon. That was the first I'd ever heard of them. And once again, being vaguely bear adjacent also usually means being sister adjacent if you're in a city with a sister house. So I got to know a couple of sisters while I was there. And it always kind of appealed to me. Like, I would get on their website and like thesisters.org and read all about it and be like, I'm going to do this someday. But the opportunity never really presented itself. Or like, I can honestly say now I just wasn't ready then. I'm sure I could have made that opportunity present itself, but I never did. And so I kind of just held it in the back of my head that that was something that I wanted to do someday. And I kind of thought that it wouldn't happen once I moved to Kentucky. I played with the idea of starting a house here, and I realized that I just didn't have the organizational skills to do that myself. I didn't have the connections to the community. I didn't know anybody, basically, because I moved here really only knowing my boyfriend at the time. And at that time, he wasn't super connected to the gay community here. And that's something that's really grown in the last few years in Louisville. Like, Louisville has become a very gay city in that time. Like, we always make top 10 on these like gayest cities in the Midwest kind of lists and things like that. So I kind of just put that out of my head again. And then Sister Trifecta, who is no longer with the order because she is the most in-demand makeup artist in the Kentuckiana area, because we're really close to Indiana, so they call it that awful portmanteau of Kentuckiana. She had to withdraw because she just couldn't give it the time anymore. But I knew her from talking to her at Sephora, and she mentioned that she was a sister. And then I was like, holy shit, there's sisters in Louisville now. I need to figure this out. And so like, I kept talking to her and friended the other sisters, and they popped up on Facebook. And it was finally just like, okay, I need to know how to become a sister. Like, you need to tell me this. And it just happened to be the same week that they had scheduled an interest meeting. And so I like traded shifts with somebody at work so that I could go to this interest meeting, and the rest is history.
What was it about the sisterhood that, you know, meeting the folks in Portland, which I love the sisters in Portland. I love them. I love them. They're one of my favorite houses. I just adore them. I have for all these years, especially their coronet. I love their coronet, which for anyone who doesn't know what I'm talking about, is the thing that the nuns wear on their head, the headpiece. I love their headpiece. So, you know, meeting them, getting to know them, trolling the websites like you're want to do. Yes. What is it about the sisters that appealed to you?
Well, I think that the first thing that usually appeals to people is the visual aspect of the sisters, and trying to deny that the first thing that drew me in was like the clownish glamour would be silly of me, because that's definitely one of the first things that I saw that I loved. At that point in time, I wanted so bad to do drag and things like that, and I just didn't know how to connect with it. I had been a bit of a scene kid back in California and wore lots of guyliner and things like that. And so like, I had all this interest in makeup, which at that time I definitely didn't realize was so tied into the like stifled gender identity that lurked beneath the surface. So I was really attracted to it on that way, like that feminine expression. And as I researched more and more, I was like, oh, holy shit, they get to do this, and they get to like raise money for the community and spread awareness. And like, I'm sure most of your listeners know a lot of the history of the sisters and their involvement in HIV/AIDS activism and things like that, and like learning that they had been the first organization to write a safer sex pamphlet before the term AIDS was even coined and things like that. Like, I was just like, this is essential queer history. And it's something that isn't in the past. It's something that's actively happening now. And that really appealed to me, that there was like this synergy of activism and drag and clowning and, you know, this ridiculous affectation that existed out there, but also served so much good. So that was really, I mean, those things are what really drew me in.
And besides your novice project, what is the favorite, like your favorite thing that you've participated in since you've been a member of this house or mission
house? That's really hard to choose. We've done a lot of really cool things and we've done a lot of really diverse things. Most recently we participated in a drag brunch, which was a lot of fun. We raised a ton of money. Well, not we, but we were part of raising a ton of money for the Kentuckiana AIDS Alliance, which is like a group of all of the HIV AIDS organizations in both states, kind of like Northern Kentucky, Southern Indiana, which are all organizations that we have raised money for ourselves as well, for the most part. So that was really fun. Like, it was just like, you know, it was different for one thing. Like, a drag brunch hasn't really been a thing in Louisville, although we're trying to bring it because that was too much fun and I want to do it again. And it was just kind of, you know, a different crowd than we usually got to. It was a bit expensive, so that brings a different crowd. You know, the LGBT community has a very diverse economic range, and I don't think that we necessarily connect with the both the higher end and the lower end as often as we could. We kind of connect with that, like, has the ability to go out to bars and drag clubs ends, because that's where a lot of our ministry takes place. So this gave us an opportunity to talk with and meet some people who were like major business owners in the city and things like that, who were very supportive of the cause, but weren't necessarily people that we would see at like Sister Bingo or something like that. Other than that, like, bar ministry is just, bar ministry is my favorite, honestly. I love doing events and I love participating in them, and, you know, being able to get up on stage and do Sister Bingo and things like that are great. But having those individual one-on-one connections out on the smoking patio and things like that are really where I feel like I'm able to connect the most with people. I feel like I also, like, I see our house connecting with different kinds of people, depending on who it is too, because it has to do a lot with the sister's comfort level, but it also has to do a lot with the sister's presentation. And so there are some people who are drawn to the sisters who are obviously more bearish, or sisters who are, you know, twinkier, although we don't really have a lot of twinky sisters, but, you know, we have sisters who are into twinks though. So that helps. I feel like when I get to do bar ministry, there's a segment of the community that really connects well with Zsa Zsa. And those aren't people who I necessarily see connecting with other sisters for whatever reason. So it's really cool to go out and engage them and not just be like fun and bitchy and fabulous with them, but also have very serious conversations with them. It's really cool to see how that blank sister canvas will just kind of automatically translate into these people who are otherwise so reserved and so nonplussed by everything, that all of a sudden they're like talking to you about their, you know, their relationship with their family, or like the troubles in their relationship, or like how people at work aren't treating them nice because of their gender identity or things like that, like how those things all just kind of come out just because they're talking to this, like, you know, 6-foot glamour clown.
Well, I think one of the things that it can, I've seen it in every house I've been a part of, or every house that I've interacted with. You know, I've done events with other houses and different other parts of the state, in California at least, not so much in Florida yet, but I'll have my chance to work with other houses. But one thing I've noticed is that there are just some people who are like, this is the way you have to be, that this is what a sister is, this is what a sister does, and they have very like if you don't basically do it the way that they do it, then you're wrong. And I think what a lot of people need to understand is when you do have a diverse group of people, like, you basically hit on it with what you were saying, like, I may appeal to some people that may not be interested in other sisters. So if I was just like those other sisters, well, maybe that one person would lose out on having someone they can connect with. So exactly. By me being who I am, you being who you are, that person being who they are, and the interest that we have, like, I'm not interested in going to leather events or that kind of thing. That's not my scene at all. I've done those events. I've done it out of solidarity and assistance, but I don't feel comfortable at those events because I'm not part of that community. But that's not me saying no sister should be part of the leather community. No sister. It's like, no, you want to do it? Great. Now those people have you to say they can connect with. I connect with a different demographic or I have different interests. So I'm going to be at these events or these spaces that maybe someone else wouldn't want to do or feel comfortable at. So it's like when you diversify and you all have interests in different segments of the community, then you are ministering to the entire community when you add it all up versus being very specific that, no, this is what we do. This is what we do. These are who we serve. And that's mm-hmm. it. Well, then you're only getting a small segment of the population when you could be reaching everybody. So I think the way that you're approaching it is right, because you're exactly right what you said, which I know you love to hear. I know you love to hear that you're right. So
I mean, I always need that validation.
I had to give it to you. Yeah. So let me ask you this, sister dear. Where the hell did this name come from? And I'll tell you, one of my friends on Facebook, when you first joined Facebook, he was like, oh my God, there is a sister. She has the greatest name ever. It is Zsa Zsa Gabortion. Don't you just love it? And my first thought was, I was like, it's gross.
Well, it certainly has limited my ability to put a plant button on my bib.
Right. So where did you come up with the name? I have learned to love it, but I'm just the kind of person, that I don't like dirty or gross names. Mm-hmm. That's just my aesthetic. That's my vibe. And I felt that as soon as you said it, I was like, it struck me, but then it was funny because then I met you and then I'm like, oh my God, I love her. So I know he saw us talking. He's probably going like, you fucking shady bitch. You said you hated her name. Well, I think it is gross, but I do love you. Can I have it both ways?
Yes, you can. Because a lot of people find me gross, but still love me. So kind of my aesthetic.
Yeah. So where did this name come from?
Well, I kind of always am playing with and thinking of like dragon sister names. It's kind of been a thing that I've done for years. And my original concept around this name was that there would be a drag duo that like performed together and they'd be Ava and Zsa Zsa Gabortion. And that was kind of where that name originally came from. I kind of kept it under my hat for a little while. And when it came time to choose names, it was between that, Thelma and Girl Please. And I had always said that I wanted to use the name Candy Warhol. And of course, I found out that there's already a drag queen named Candy Warhol, because of course there is. And of course, she's fabulous and she beat me to it. And that's fine. I'll let that go. And then I realized that in our order, particularly, we all call each other by our sister names all the time because we have some repeat names. And it gets very confusing. Like, which Joe are you talking about? Now we have two Ryans as well. So that gets confusing. So we go by order names more often than secular names. And I was like, well, I don't really want to be Thelma. So that and Sister Alma had elevated a couple of months prior to me and declared the name Alma. And I was like, okay, well, I don't want to be Alma and Thelma either. So that's when I was like, okay, I guess it's Zsa Zsa. And when I said it out loud for the first time in the meeting, the whole, like all 20 of us were laughing about it. And I was like, okay, I guess this is the right direction to go.
Now, everyone, like if I talk to you online or you post something or I mention you on my show, I always get the reaction. Everyone is like, oh my God, I fucking love her name. She has the best name. And I guess I'm like, well, okay, I guess I'm alone here. Okay, fine. Okay. Because I just come from a school of, could you say this name to a child? You know, like if you're at a pride event and I'm like, you know, like there's like, I'm Sister Iwana Felcha. Like, can you say that name to a child? You know, like...
Well, if a child already knows what felching is, I think that there's already been some wrong turns in that child's upbringing. But, you know, I also think about that with, like, Sister Twisted Fister up in Toronto. Like, when she meets kids, she's just Sister Twisted. And I introduce myself as Sister Zsa Zsa. Usually I don't throw on the gabortion unless I think I'm in the right crowd for it. I also wear a name tag. So I don't think I've ever had anybody read the name tag and then respond negatively. The most I've gotten is like a chuckle, like the worst. I think they just don't say anything when they don't like it. I do know, however, that Sister Tishy Galore's mother is very, very Catholic and sees us interact with, because Tishy doesn't have a sister profile. Tishy just uses her regular profile. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I interact with that profile, and there's been several times where she's been like, so these nun people that you're hanging out with, some of them have very offensive names, and I just know that she's talking about me.
Oh, she's totally talking about you.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm the worst. I'm the only one with a vaguely offensive name, I think. But it's like, you know, it's still not actually dirt. So, yeah, I think I'm the one who pushes the envelope there. I had another sister recently tell me that when she first friended me and saw that name, she was just like, oh God, oh, we're not going to end up staying friends for very long. And now she's somebody that, like, we text all the time. Like, it's Sister Mary Stonewall Craft of the Mother House of Seattle, or Washington, I'm sorry, Mother House of Washington. And we talk all the time now. And she was like, okay, I guess you're more than an abortion.
Yes, you definitely, I definitely think you are. But before we continue the rest of our interview, we actually have to take a break. A commercial break. And a musical.
Dude, I'm exhausted.
Yes, and a musical intermission. So when we come back, we've got more banter, fun anecdotes, etc. with the one and only Novice Sister Zsa Zsa Gabortion. So stay tuned. Every drag queen needs merchandise for their fans to buy, whether that's a t-shirt or a poster or a coffee mug. But you need a great illustration to put on that merch. Well, I have just the guy for you. Hit up Freddie Ralda at freddieralda.com, FreddieRalda.com, and work with him to create the most sickening image that will have your fans throwing their coins at you for more. He also has an amazing web store where you can buy his RuPaul's Drag Race illustrations, his adult coloring book, and if you use promo code JOYBOMB in the shopping cart, you're going to get 20% off. So check him out. FreddieRalda.com.
Well, hello, this is Devin Green, as in, well, hello, I have a huge vagine, I'm going to underline you. You may know me from live music shows, Drag Race, OCC makeup ads, or as Betty Bowers America's best Christian. Interested? Go to Devin Green, DevenGreen.com. And if you are tuning in to Joy Bomb with Sister Indica, you already have great taste.
Hey girl, hey! It's singer, rapper, Billboard Top 10 comedic recording artist, Wendy Ho. And if you like listening to Joy Bomb with Sister Indica, and you probably do because you're listening to this message, then you might just enjoy the Wendy Experience What Had Happened Was podcast, available on iTunes. And of course, if your values align with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, then you'll love my nasty-ass songs about love and drugs and butt sex. All this and more available at WendyExperience.com. And if you're a drag queen that lip-syncs my shit that you pilfered off of YouTube, go buy that shit on iTunes under Wendy Ho, Ho with no E, because I ain't no garden to a fool.
Visit Sarah's SoCal Succulents for all your custom gift and decor needs. Using her creative talents and artistic eye, Sarah creates one-of-a-kind, drought-tolerant arrangements that will last forever with little care or watering. Sarah sources unique vessels from local thrift shops and flea markets, upcycling them into unique gifts or creating centerpieces for your next event. She will work with you to bring your vision to colorful life. Be sure to visit her Facebook page for examples of her work, including her signature Rainbow Gardens. That's facebook.com/Sarah's SoCal Succulents, and that's Sarah with an H. Make sure to email her for pricing and details at sarahbnsd@cox.net or on Twitter at sarahbnsd. And don't forget, that's Sarah with an H. Sarah's SoCal Succulents. She's the best.
And now, a musical intermission.
One day I'll grow up, I'll be a beautiful woman. One day I'll grow up, I'll be a beautiful girl. One day I'll grow up, I'll be a beautiful woman. One day I'll grow up, I'll be a beautiful girl. But for today, I am a child. For today, I am a boy. For today, I am a child. For today, I am a boy. One day I'll grow up, I feel the power in me. One day I'll grow up, this I'm sure. One day I'll grow up, I'll know a womb within me. One day I'll grow up, feel it full and pure. But for today, I'm a child. For today, I am a boy. For today, I'm a child. For today,
and we're back. We're back.
Dizzying.
Didn't it feel like we were gone forever?
Like almost an eternity. I feel like I have a lot of succulents I probably need to buy now and probably have to go to work.com.
Absolutely. Well, the song that you guys just heard is by an amazing artist who I just adore, Antonina the Johnsons. The song is For Today I Am a Boy from the album I Am a Bird Now, which came out a long time ago.
Yeah.
And whenever I pull a song out from the past, there's typically a good reason for it. Not only are you, you know, all right looking nun, kind of funny, kind of got an all right personality, but you're also trans.
Yes.
So I can't think of, when I think of, and the reason I chose that song is I too identify as, I guess I would be more under genderqueer heading because I did not transition, but when that album came out and I heard it, it like was, it hit something very strong and deep in me where I was like, It brought it up. Like, I had always known that I was trans to some degree. I just didn't really act on it. I was more interested in transitioning as a teenager. Then I changed my mind. And then it kind of, I buried it and buried it and buried it. And when that album came out, it all just kind of started coming back out. And I had to face it. I had to face these demons that I was, like, toiling with inside and really come to terms with it. So that was a very important album to me. So I didn't choose that song cavalierly. It actually has a very deep personal resonance within me. So I want to ask you, number one, are you a fan of Antony?
I am a huge fan of Antony.
Did you have a similar experience with that album?
I did. I was probably fresh out of high school at that point, which I hope that doesn't make you feel older.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Okay. I hate it when people say things like that. Like, oh, I was in junior high when that happened. I was like, well, I was an adult and I had bills when that happened. So I had heard some Antony from the album prior to that. I had yet another internet friend who had shared it with me. And it was like, okay, yeah, I kind of like this. And then I heard that song. And then the cover of that album with that picture of Candy Darling on it. And like, just like the whole thing all together. And like, I don't know. Like, it was just like, it makes me think of the principal, or not principal, the dean in Community, where he's like, this better not awaken anything in me. And I feel like that was one of those things where I was just like, oh, so there is a way to like have some sort of solvency in your gender. Like, it doesn't, I'm not stuck with this thing that I have, you know, grown up trying to appease. It definitely took me a long time to come to terms with a lot of those other things, but very early on, Antony and the Johnsons was one of those bands that I just turned to because I was like, they get it. I get it. They get it. We can get it together and just have a good cry.
And what I liked about him is that, because when I was really coming to terms with everything, it wasn't a time where all trans was seen as was male to female, female to male. You transitioned, mm-hmm. You got all the surgeries, you took your hormones, you became a quote-unquote passable woman. You were stealth. That was the term, stealth. So you were unclockable. It wasn't like, I'm a trans woman. You were like, I'm a woman. And it was very much like, that's the mentality. That was the school. And that's what I was, when I was doing all my research and really coming to terms with everything, I'm like, this seems like so limited. And then as I was really, you know, doing all my research and my planning and my surgeries and my electrolysis and all this shit, I just like, as I was going on, I'm just like, I don't know if this is really, because I'm a very decisive person, but I couldn't choose. I couldn't make the choice. And I'm like, look, I do not waffle. Like, I don't sit there, I eat waffles, but I don't waffle. I'm like very decisive. I know exactly what I think, and it's very easy for me to make a decision. So the fact that I was going back and forth, I was just like, there's gotta be more. There's gotta be more. And then over time, as the years have gone on, like today in 2016, they understand, at least we all do in the gay community, that there is a spectrum of gender identity. It's not straight up male to female, female to male, stealth kind of transitioning. There's a whole range. So where do you feel that you fit in that range?
Well, I think for me, I like the idea that people are identifying gender as being a spectrum. I feel like even a spectrum is still very linear. There's one end and there's another end. I feel that gender is more of a continuum, where it's just this kind of thing that like you're always renegotiating your gender, especially if you're like sitting there thinking about it. So I spent years where I would be like every couple months or so, I'd be like, so am I a boy? Am I a girl? What is going on with me? And then it took me years to realize that like cisgender people who are not trans in any way, don't fall anywhere other than, you know, identifying with the sex they were assigned at birth, don't think about that regularly. It's kind of like when somebody's like, I don't know if I'm gay or not. It's like, probably not that you're necessarily gay because you think you might be gay, but you're probably not straight, because people who don't question those, or like, you know, who don't fall in that category don't tend to question them as much. Not that that's a 100% thing. So I definitely don't identify as binarily female or male. I definitely feel that I am more genderqueer or gender nonconforming, and that's a lot of what I'll say when I am pressed to introduce myself as a trans person. I definitely feel more female than anything else, and I think that that's something that I felt for a very long time. In a lot of ways, you know, some of those associations are kind of shallow for me. Like, I've always loved makeup, I've always loved clothes and shoes, I've always loved having my hair long and things like that, which aren't necessarily male or female aspects, even though we assign them genders as a society. But I think it took me a while to realize that my affinity for those things and me wanting to push them away was me needing to express that part of my gender, like that I was performing maleness, but I wasn't performing any femaleness. And that was like doing myself a disservice. And then once I sort of let that in, like I started experimenting with drag and things like that. And I just realized that I didn't want to come out of the drag. Like that's where I wanted to exist majorly. So I was like, no, I'm actually not really a boy. I've never really been a boy. It's still really hard to like pin that down though. Cause I kind of, that's why that song works so well for me for Today I Am a Boy, because, you know, I work a couple different jobs, and at one of my jobs, I'm very out. There's another trans woman who works there, and, you know, they're very accepting. They, you know, it was, I came on when the business was new and they were like still building out the building, and they opted to make the restrooms gender neutral so that I would feel more comfortable and things like that. I know, it's sweet. It's a little weird, but it's sweet. that's like a big decision to make just because of me. It makes me a little uncomfortable. But so like I'm, you know, very out and free there. I tend to put on makeup before I go there. My clothing tends to be a little less gendered as potentially male, I guess, although I don't have a lot of male clothing. Like even the pants that I own are all from the women's section now. So it's funny when I get read as a boy, because I'm like, none of this is actually boy clothes. But then in my other job, I have a full-time job where I work for a 75-year-old pottery studio, and it's significantly more conservative. And it's not that I don't feel that I can come out there, but I like the clientele and the people that I work with there are just not as comfortable with that. And, you know, I'm working with a lot of older, wealthy white folks and things like that. And it doesn't necessarily lend itself to being as open. And so like, I don't feel as comfortable expressing myself fully there. So I tend to, you know, gravitate towards more gender neutral clothing or things like that, or like not wear makeup or something like that, or only put on makeup when I'm about to leave to go to the other job and things like that. So I live a lot of my day-to-day life in kind of a gray area, which isn't bad. I don't dislike it, but it's also not always my favorite, because sometimes I just want to wake up and put on a dress, goddammit.
Do you have a gender neutral name, or do you have to toggle between names at different jobs?
Well, I've been going by the name D as my first name for a while. It was the first letter of the name I was given at birth, and it is also still the first letter of my current legal name. And so most people call me D that are in my life, unless they're calling me Zsa Zsa, which even happens at work sometimes too, because people know me as Zsa Zsa now. So D was a friend of mine actually came up with it, because I was like, I don't want to go by this boy name anymore because it just doesn't fit me. And they were like, well, what if you chose something like this, where it's like kind of like, you know, it's kind of like just, it's just a letter. Like it can be feminine, but people call people with D's in their names D all the time. And like people already call me that occasionally, is like, oh, big D, blah, 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 which I hate. Don't call me that. Yeah, so that was just like kind of an easy way to start. And I think that's really where I started my social transition, was by asking people not to call me David, but to call me D. Oh, I just did it. I'm going to do that. Oh,
do you want me to edit that out?
No, you're good. I don't really care. Good. I was trying not to, but it's like, I mean, I lived as David for 29 years of my life. So like, whatever.
Because, I mean, I'm really lazy and I just didn't want to edit it out. I was like, oh, please hope she says no, because it takes effort and time. And I don't have that kind of time. Too much clicking and just too much drama. D should stand for drama, is what it should stand for in your life, lady.
I'm so dramatic.
So now that we're on the trans tip, I did want to find out, before I ask you kind of about the stuff going on politically, what are your thoughts on Caitlyn Jenner and her show and her whole deal?
Well, full disclosure, I haven't seen her show. I've seen clips of it in things on Facebook, but I don't have like cable or anything like that, so I don't really watch television in that way. If I want to watch TV, I usually have to download it, and I'm not going through all that effort for Caitlyn Jenner.
Wow. That was rude.
I was excited at first because I know that there had been like tabloid rumblings of her gender identity for years. And it was one of those things for a really long time that I was like, it's something that everybody's talked about for so long. There's probably an element of truth to that. And so I wasn't really surprised when she came out. What did surprise me to some degree was just like her Republicanness. I know that, you know, she had spent most of her life as a white Republican man. And so it doesn't really make sense that she would switch all that just because she got some surgery. But yeah, that was a little surprising. I think that she says some really off the wall things because of that. And she really doesn't come from a place of understanding her privilege. She really got to transition in a vacuum, which most of us don't get to do. You know, the day-to-day experience of being transgender in America or in the world in general is so much more confrontational than anything she's ever had to deal with. And that really builds a different experience for you overall. And so I think that she has kind of lacked those experiences, not necessarily by any fault of her own, but it really creates a very privileged viewpoint of how the world works. And at a time like 2016, when people are anxious for votes and for social recognition and things like that, like, you know, she's going to get a lot of validation from people who don't really care about the community. I'm going to say community, but that's a phrasing that I hate because I don't really see there to be much of a trans community. Because for years, trans people were told, like, you know, two trans women shouldn't stand next to each other because then you're going to get clocked and things like that. So the sense of community that exists for the LGB portion of everything doesn't really translate to the T in that way.
Well, if you want to be, and if you want to be literal, it's really LG.
That's true.
Because I think B's are getting lost in the shuffle way more than T's. Completely honest. Like, let's be honest here. I definitely think the B's are completely irrelevant. They're not seen. Their experiences are completely invalidated. They don't exist. Oh, they just haven't chose. Oh, blah, blah. You know, even more so from the gay community pummeling these poor folks and saying, no. Nope. You're gay. Oh, you sleep with, you're gay.
You're not doing it right.
You're a lesbian. Or actually, you know what? It's really just about bisexual men. Because I think people really don't have any issues with fully accepting that a woman can be bisexual. It's like, of course they can be.
I think some degree that that's true, but I also think that a lot of times people are like, oh, well, she's just straight. She'll just have sex with a woman occasionally. Or she'll make out with people. Like, the understanding of what bisexuality is for a woman is also a little bit stunted. Because it'll be like, oh, well, a woman who's bisexual is really just straight, and a man who's bisexual is really just gay. And like,
right, and they're just having the girl's having a little fun on the side and having some fun, but she'll eventually settle down and marry a man. But yeah, if it's a man, it's just he's gay and he's just confused and he's just – maybe he just wants to have one foot in the straight world still so he's accepted. So I feel really bad for the bees. So if you're a bee out there and you're listening, I feel bad for you. I feel bad that the community treats you this way because I don't. You have a safe place here because I will put out. Just to let you know, bisexual men, I will put out. I'll comfort you. And remember, no refunds. That's my policy. My policy is no refunds. So all of the – and wait, you mentioned when you were talking about Louisville. Is that right? Louisville?
Yeah, they don't say Louisville. It's Louisville.
So you had said that it's one of the top – it gets rated as one of the top cities in the Midwest. Is Kentucky considered the Midwest?
Yeah, so that's what's weird about Louisville is that we're really far north. Like, we're further north than like parts of Ohio that are considered the Midwest, because we're at the very tip top of the state, basically.
Mm.
It's counted as a Midwestern city a lot, even though Kentucky is generally considered southern. So like, if you ask southern Kentucky people if they're in the south, they're like, yeah, we're in the fucking south.
Oh, we're losing you a bit.
They're like, no.
Where are you talking into? Because it sounds like you went into a hole.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know.
Are you covering the microphone?
No, I'm not touching anything.
Well, I will let you know that if you're going to have your own podcast, you need to get your shit together, lady. Because you need to know what's going on if you're going to have your own show at some point. I'm just pro tip for you.
I'm just looking to replace Wendy Williams. I'll be the less transphobic Wendy Williams.
Well, we'll see what we can do to make that happen. Just make sure you get these technical issues settled. So all of these states in the South, and I will lump Kentucky into a Southern state just because I will. They're passing all these religious liberty bills. They're passing all these trans bathroom bills. And I just heard that I guess the governor of Kentucky or of North Carolina is not going to sign that into law.
Good.
That's what I heard. What does it feel like to live? I mean, I guess I could ask myself that same question, but I'm interviewing you. What's it feel like to live in a state where they have these ridiculous, like they're writing these ridiculous laws, like religious liberty or trans bathroom laws?
You know, it's kind of frustrating because when you look at how Matt Bevin became our governor, like it was because of record low voter turnout. And so I, for one, had an Oregon ID when that came along because I'm really lazy. And I've since switched to a Kentucky ID with the right name on it. And I'm registered to vote, hopefully. I'm registered to vote as David. I don't know if I'm registered to vote as Demeter. I have to wait to see if the website switches over. So I'm not sure how that's going to work. But it was really frustrating to see all these people that just like didn't go vote. And then that's what happens. It's like we had a Democratic governor forever. And it's one of the things that had made Kentucky a pretty decent place to live. And now we have this. I mean, like, I know as sisters, we're not supposed to really hold political opinions. But I think if you look at anything that Matt Bevin does, you will agree that he is a Democrat. And he just doesn't get it. Like, he doesn't get how to be governor. He doesn't get how the state wants things run. And so he is pushing his own agenda without really necessarily listening to people, but people didn't get listened to because they didn't turn out to vote in the first place. So that's disheartening at one, because I think that I know a lot of people who voted and who were very politically active. I think the community here in Louisville is pretty politically active. I don't know how the rest of the state goes with that, because it can be a challenge in Southern Kentucky to be not Republican. But it's really disheartening because these kinds of laws don't really affect the trans people who live that self lifestyle, you know, who pass and things like that. These kinds of laws affect people who are visibly queer, who are visibly gender nonconforming and things like that. And in a world where it's already incredibly uncomfortable to not follow the gender binary, this just makes it that much worse, because it gives people an opportunity to legislate against you and to openly discriminate against you. And to some degree, it's kind of nice, because like if I know a business is anti-gay, well, then I'm just not going to go there. I'd rather know that now. But at the same time, I also think it's bullshit that they're allowed to operate in such a discriminatory way, you know? Like, I can understand a private business being able to refuse service to anyone that they want to, but I don't understand a person working for a governmental agency whose job it is to hand out marriage licenses, Kim Davis, just being able to say no and not do their job just because they hold a personal belief. Because there are plenty of things that I do as part of my job that I wouldn't necessarily do on my own, you know, but it's part of my job, so I do it. Like, that's how I get my paycheck.
Well, right. Like, I have clients in Northern
North Carolina.
It's Carolina. I'm like, wait a minute. Like, I just blanked out on the name of the state. Look, I was at Pride weekend. My brain is fried. Like, you have to give me a break. Like, I've been in the sun all day, 2 days in a row. my brain is sun just fried. It's fried.
You were in that big black coronet too. So
right, like, just brought
as well
it to
grab
me.
Your head and boil.
Right. So I have clients there, or I have clients in other states that are very homophobic or have anti-gay laws, and I don't get to choose that I don't work with them.
Right.
I don't have any fucking choice in the matter. That's my job, and I do it. So is Kim Davis like the joke of Kentucky? Isn't she from Kentucky?
She is. She's from Rowan County, Kentucky. Not Rowan County, Rowan, because we can't pronounce anything right here. And you know, she is, I mean, like, she's been, I've seen at least 5 different Kim Davis drag queens since all that started happening. And, you know, I saw a queen do a number dressed as Kim Davis in
her jail clothing, or like in like an orange jumpsuit, and she did the theme from Orange is the New Black, and like ripped up a Bible or something on stage. It was ridiculous. But yeah, I think that in general, people don't really respect her in any way. I think that she thought that she was going to be this champion for religious liberty. And even, you know, conservative people like my parents are like, you were elected into a job. Like, it's your job to do it. You know, the Bible says render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. You know, if you're serving an elected position, it's your job to do the things that are required in that position. And that doesn't change just because you have a religious belief. And, you know, if you think that you're going to potentially have to do things that go against your religious beliefs to the point that you don't think you should do them, then you need to step down and let somebody else do the job.
Well, on that note, I'm going to ask you to step down from being my guest, because we've got shit to do. We've got lives. We got things we have to do. We got to pay the bills. We got to make that money. And the next time that you guys hear from me, it'll be the 100th episode. Are you excited for the 100th episode?
I am very excited because I've been invested for the last 40 or so episodes. So, which all happened very quickly because you're a prolific podcaster. But yeah, I think it's going to be exciting. Plus, I haven't really heard a lot of the older stuff because I haven't gotten to listen to it on work.com. And since it doesn't sit up on iTunes, it's not as available to me.
I know. No, well, cute. We're gonna bring all the episodes. There's a delay, but they're all coming up in anticipation for this momentous occasion. And I just want to say thank you so much for being my guest on my 99th show. It's a special show. You're a very special guest.
I'm extremely special.
Will you come back and we'll do hot topics and stuff like that at another time?
Oh, definitely.
Well, that does it. Another episode of Joy Bomb wrapped. Make sure to visit sisterindica.com. That is the mothership of all things Sister Indica, where you can find links to my social media profiles, videos, photos, and more. Subscribe to the Joy Bomb podcast on iTunes. Subscribers get Joy Bomb podcasts as they're loaded in real time. Awesome, right? Make sure to visit work.com and follow us on all social media platforms. Work.com is home to the Sister Indica Says column, this Joy Bomb podcast, and more, tons and tons more. Don't just do it for me, because there are a lot of amazing writers giving you daily content you can't find anywhere else on the web. That's work.com, W-E-R-R-R-K.com. for your daily fix of fabulous. Last but not least, make sure you're following your homegirl on Twitter. That's twitter.com/sisterindica. And as we all know, indica is spelled I-N-D-I-C-A. If you see it spelled any other way, report that bitch. She's an imposter. Because there's only one Sister Indica. Until next time.